Rebuilding America. The Rick Smith Show. The walls come tumbling down. The walls come crumbling, crumbling. The walls come tumbling, tumbling down.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. So Fox News, they're reporting that evidently Don Jr.'s been pimping a book around about, you know, I guess a defense of daddy, if you will. And it has gotten, well, I would say cool reception, but evidently none. It seems that all of the publishing houses, I guess, have passed on it, or at least the major publishing houses. And, you know, I guess, you know, they didn't really have an appetite for what they were pitching, which were, I guess, lies, and more lies. It's what they do well. I mean, you've got to give them credit. Anyway, let's find out what happened yesterday, the big primary day. That's why I've asked our good friend Adam Parkometko to come talk with us. Adam, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So, big day. Eight states had their primary, California being the biggest. And what we were told in the run-up is that, you know, Democrats, because so many people were involved, could basically shut themselves out. How'd that work out for us?
Yeah, and I think there was a lot of chatter and people going kind of crazy, and I think that was all sort of accurate. I mean, there was actually a really good chance that a number of those we could have been shut out. But as of right now, we have not been shut out in any of them. They're still in a bunch of different areas going through the mail-in ballots, and as that sort of gets closer to the ones that were sent in Sunday, Monday, Election Day, just, you know, before, I think we'll see. We already have a pretty good idea of where that's headed because the numbers are consistent with where people were on Election Day as opposed to the early mail-in ballots. But right now, Democrats have been shut out of zero. So that means that they've got at least one Democrat in the top two of all 53 seats. And then Republicans, as of tonight, have been shut out in 10 of those seats. And obviously, things could change, but the seven seats that Hillary carried that Republicans held on to, which are the big targeted ones, we've got a Democrat right now on the ballot in all of them. And then in New Jersey, you know, it looks like Democrats united there. And a lot of people, including folks over at Cook Political, believe there's a good chance come November election that Republicans will no longer have a single federal office holder in the state of New Jersey, which could put us up another four seats.
Now you can thank Chris Christie for that.
Yeah, exactly. Chris Christie, Donald Trump, Russia, and a number of people. But it's looking really good. I mean, between what happened in your state and the number of pickups we're going to have there, New Jersey, and really what is just a number of open and toss-up seats in California, I think that there's a very good chance the House will be decided and flipped well before we get to California. But California could determine just how large the majority is.
Yeah, but I'm still hoping for the Senate too. This House, if I'm looking at the tea leaves and I'm reading this right, it seems almost certain, as long as people get out and vote and as long as no one gets thrown off the voting rolls, because even in California, I found out that Fonzie didn't get the vote because he was one of, what, 110,000 people, registered voters who were just, I guess, kicked off the voting rolls?
Yeah, there's a number of people that showed up and weren't there and had to do provisional ballots. I think, you know, for the Senate, you know, one kind of really interesting thing that happened last night that a lot of people didn't see was there was only one special election last night, and that was in the state of Missouri. And it was the state Senate seat that Republicans had that Donald Trump carried by over 5 points, and Democrats flipped that seat last night and not only flipped it, but it was a +5 Trump seat that we won with a 60-40 margin.
Wow. But here again, I mean, you look at what's going on the last 18 months, and in Missouri, you look at what's going on with the Republican Party there and their governor. I mean, you almost gotta think that, you know, those middle voters are going, let's try the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, what's interesting about that Missouri special election is that if you're Claire McCaskill, that's looking pretty good. You know, it's 25. You know, that's a major flip. But not only that, we've got, you know, a great candidate running in Tennessee. And I think between Tennessee and West Virginia, this year's is looking really good. And I think one of the broader issues that will come to a head at some point, which is sort of what you just said and with some of these Republicans, is where do they kind of go? You know, I mean, I think a number of them will be comfortable voting for a Democrat, I'm not sure that they will necessarily ever self-identify as a Democrat. And even if you look at some of the kind of national folks like Rick Wilson, you know, I think that the ones that are out there kind of saying the Republican Party left them, there's not really a central depository for folks. You know, I'm not sure these are folks that will ever say, I'm a Democrat. And I do kind of wonder some days under Trump, you know, what does this kind of two-party system look like and how is it affected? And, you know, does it continue to hold together? And, you know, we are this kind of giant experiment. But I think that many of them will vote for Democrats. Look at the Rohrabacher seat, California 48. You know, 70% of voters in the district that voted against Rohrabacher, and Donald Trump congratulated him on this huge win. But that, you know, Cook Political has, not just as a toss-up, but, you know, people know who their representative is, and 70% of them voted against them in a district that, you know, tilts Republican.
Yeah, I mean, that sure beats that poll that I saw a couple years ago where everyone hates Congress, but, you know, it's, you know, they got like a 10% rating for Congress overall, but, you know, 80% approval for your guy. You know, the whole institution sucks, but my guy's great. This is one of those, not so much.
Yeah, no, I think that's entirely right. And I think the, you know, both parties have kind of equal problems. I think Democrats are going to do really well this year and have to kind of figure out in general right now what Republicans have been doing for a long time, which is that kind of old saying, you know, Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line. Democrats are going to have to do both this year, but they're also going to have to make sure that they get organized and prepared for not just doing well in the off year in 2019, but, you know, loving whoever they want to love in the primaries and falling in line in the general in 2020 and, you know, making sure what has happened in the last 2 years never happens again.
Yeah, and figuring out how to heal this. This divide that's still, and it's amazing to me that, you know, still, we're still talking about the 2016 election. There's still people who are, you know, who are mad because you supported this candidate or that. And I'm going, you know, get over it. We've got a common evil right now. And that's
right.
What we need to be solving.
Yeah. And I talked to a couple of Republicans yesterday who think Trump is just absolutely insane. They think he's destroying the party. They've considered themselves kind of just to the right of middle and, you know, kind of conservative on some issues, but this is not, you know, anything they associate themselves with. And, you know, I think what was interesting last night was you look at all the states that Democrats, you know, were playing all over, but, you know, in some of these states where we may be able to, you know, pick some things up. What was interesting is in some of the areas where, you know, the Republicans are likely going to hold on to something. And I think, you know, you had a female member of Congress who pulled back her endorsement from Trump, and she's now heading into a runoff. And so, you know, watching kind of what the Republican Party is doing to itself, especially, you know, if someone does decide to stand up to him, is sort of an experiment in itself because it's relatively new. And I think the farther we get towards Election Day, the more they've got to do that because, you know, Harley Ruta, who currently down by 45 votes out in the Rohrabacher district, but you know, my guess is he will bring that home by the time the rest of the early votes are counted. You know, he's already calling on Donald Trump to come in the district and campaign with Rohrabacher.
Boy, so is Gavin Newsom. You know, that was one of the great tweets of the morning was him saying, you know, please come campaign for my opponent as much as possible. Come on, bring yourself out.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's and I think you'll see that all over the place. But I think this is the year, you know, we've got a chance just all over, whether it's, you know, Iowa. There's some interesting seats in Florida. And as we get closer to August, you know, some of these states that have late primaries like Michigan and Wisconsin and Florida, we'll be talking about more. But there's really pickup opportunities all over the place. And I think with time going by and so much other noise, people are forgetting just how many Republicans have actually announced that they are retiring and how many of these seats have opened up.
Yeah, I mean it's a huge number. Last I saw was what, like 48?
Yeah, it's probably north of there. And then I think, you know, if you just start to cut out the seats that they wouldn't win, period, or that, you know, as we talked about in California, they've been shut out, their map is extremely limited. And this was always supposed to be the year where, you know, it was a terrible Senate map for us, and you know, we didn't really know what was going to happen on the House side, and Trump is running this kind of quote unquote continual campaign, or at least what is masqueraded to look like he's running something, and it's really just, you know, filling kind of the void in time for, I guess, in between pardons. But there, you know, the map is shrinking more and more, and I think we've pretty much put to rest this giant question mark, which was always the California jungle primary, which, you know, something that Schwarzenegger had pushed through, and I think at the time looked good, and now people are regretting it, and maybe at some point that will be changed. But we've moved past that, and there's a lot of really good states coming up.
Yeah, and one of the things that I paid attention to yesterday, and I'm looking at here in Pennsylvania, is the enthusiasm on the Democratic side that, you know, almost no seat is going uncontested, at least not here in Pennsylvania. And you go, that to me, that's remarkable, considering, you know, the last election, especially in the, you know, the state House and Senate races, where there was like 100 seats that nobody ran for because they were uncontested. And it's this year is much different.
Yeah, and I think one of the main committees that we've talked about that's done an incredible job ensuring that the kind of state House, state Senate caucuses, and others up on the ballot are doing what they need to do is the DLCC, the Democratic Leadership Campaign Committee, which is the one that really just put a ton of time and energy into that special election win last night. But we've seen other states too, like Ohio and North Carolina, where historically we haven't competed for everything, and they've built on what Virginia and New Jersey did in 2017, and they are competing for every single state legislative seat this year, which is, you know, hugely incredible. And I think that Bakari Sellers said it best last night, which is, you know, it's not, as he got a question about how he felt with these California seats, and it's like, it's going to work itself out, but this is a great problem that we have. And the fact that people are stepping up, you know, we weren't really talking about a lot of these districts where Democrats actually did get out and endorse and did it in a very united way with many of these candidates. And I think what's really interesting, too, is seeing where the party is endorsing state by state some of these candidates. But it's only 20 or 30 people that are doing the endorsements. And then the broader group of voters is actually kind of reversing that state party endorsement, making sure that they're choosing their nominee. There's one up in Connecticut, which I think is going to be huge. If it's a district, Connecticut 5, which will be a pickup, it encompasses Newtown, and there is the 2016 Teacher of the Year who was awarded by Barack Obama. Her name is Johanna Hayes, single mom, lifelong labor leader, teacher. She's been endorsed by, you know, the Teamsters and the firefighters. She's only been running for 10 days, and she's an incredible candidate, and I think it's people like that who only have one opponent, but the state party in Connecticut has endorsed her opponent, where you're going to see that really that even though state parties can be very strong and we should build them, people are tired of having decisions made on their behalf by just a few people.
No, and again, but what that brings you back to is, you know, the 2016 election, and one of the complaints that I hear all the time from my Bernie friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I guess it sort of depends, you know, what people kind of label themselves or what they view as the party. But I think, that argument is a tough argument to make, considering that we've had the same process. And no matter which way you cut the numbers from 2016, Hillary would have won. You know, it's like if you take the superdelegates off the table, she won. If there's that kind of like chart that someone had put together, which did every single way. If you use the GOP rules, if you don't have any, no matter which way you cut it, she ends up winning. And so I think that it's a tough argument to make. And I think, you know, there's going to be kind of a lot of soul searching in that, if you will, kind of wing of the party. Whereas, you know, Bernie Sanders, Iowa state director, ran for Congress last night and came in third and did terrible in Iowa. And, you know, there's quite a few candidates that were endorsed by Our Revolution that really didn't make it anywhere. So I think they've got a lot of work to do too. And I think the ultimate piece is that, you know, Bernie wanted to run for the Vermont endorsement from the Democratic Party. And then if he got it, he was going to reject it just to kind of keep someone out of the race. So, you know, I'm very skeptical of a lot of people that make arguments in his name.
Going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Going forward, where do you see things going in the coming months? I mean, does this? I'm hoping this wave continues, because you know, every day there's more fuel added to this fire. But the more I'm talking to people recently, the more there's almost like a fatigue going on. Do you fear any chance that there's a burnout between now and November?
No, I don't think so. I think that I think the year's flying by, and I think that if you look at the calendar and some of just the craziness that's coming up, I mean, June 15th is a huge day. That's where you've got Manafort back on the Manafort trial. You've got Cohen. I mean, all this kind of stuff that's going on, a lot of which doesn't move voters, but it is providing kind of fuel and energy to a lot of people out there that, you know, believe that there's been a lot of wrongdoing and want to see justice for it. If you balance that with what else is going on, I think California and some of these other states really motivated a lot of the activists and volunteers around the country. I think the biggest, I think that volunteers and candidates and others have figured out a really good way to work together and get candidates donations directly to candidates and so forth. I think the biggest problem that we actually have is going to be, what do we do when we win? And I think we're going to win overwhelmingly. And I think that Democrats are going to do exactly what we talked about earlier here, which is they are going to fall in love with all these candidates as they have been, and they are going to fall in line with, you know, whomever the nominee is, whether that is, you know, someone they fell in love with or whether it's someone they will fall in love with. And then what happens when we take back the House? What happens when we have the majority in the Senate? And I think that is going to be one of the biggest tests of the Democratic Party. It's, you know, what does Tom Perez do? What is his plan for 2020? I mean, you know, we don't want to look too far ahead, but at the same time, the DNC is tasked with doing just two or three things, one of which is preparing for a presidential primary in the convention. That's actually two of the three things. The third one is to support state and local parties. So I think, you know, we just need to have our act together, and, you know, we need to be a big tent and be open to anyone and everyone that wants to run for office, and leave it up to these localities to determine, you know, who their nominee is, and get rid of all of these kind of, you know, litmus tests for different issues. But obviously there's no place in the party for other things that we reject when it comes to Trump and, you know, much of what he's doing. And I think time will tell, but I think it's going to be a great year. I don't think that anyone's going to lose any energy or motivation. I think that from a national standpoint, we just need to figure out how all this works.
Yeah, I'm hoping so as well. Good stuff. I want to shift gears a bit, ask a couple of quick questions. You know, just a couple of real quick things. Today, evidently, we found out that the Canadians burnt down the White House in the War of 1812. Thoughts?
Yeah. You know, sometimes I kind of feel like I need to go out and just take a history book out, you know, even like the stuff that my son's learning in elementary school, just for a good refresher, because obviously it wasn't Canada. And I think the, you know, being half British from my mom's side, I don't need a history book for that piece. But it's really unbelievable. I mean, this guy is just, you know, I don't know if it is, you know, if he's not book smart, if it is ignorance, if it is, you know, what it is. But I think it's probably something he believed he said at the time. And I think one of the biggest problems that we see every single day is that it's becoming kind of the new norm. And so I really, you know, when April Ryan was in the White House briefing room yesterday, and she was just pushing back on Sarah Sanders and demanding to get the answer to her question, I think that's what we used to expect, you know, for those of us that were kind of these political junkies that watched C-SPAN and saw Helen Thomas. You know, it's like, this is, we need people to build on those that are asking questions. And if they don't get a question asked, we need the next person to. But the ignorance and the lack of respect, you know, the fact that this staffer in the White House has likely moved to another part of the administration that attacked John McCain and didn't lose her job, and we're not getting an answer on that, and there's no apology. You know, we can't forget all these different things. I mean, a day goes by and we forget that, you know, Donald Trump put together his own bill of health and never denied the fact that he did that, and we still don't know what his health is because the most recent one was not credible.
Yeah, I mean, it's just every day you wake up and it's another sign of an authoritarian regime. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where you go, it's almost hard to believe that we're here.
That's true. And I mean, this is, when you look up some of the definitions, you know, in terms of kind of what we're describing Trump as, I mean, he really, I suppose if he does anything well, it is, you know, he is a natural dictator, but, you know, it's not what our country is. It's not what we're built upon. And it's, you know, we have more than, you know, one or two amendments. And so we got to push back and we got to, you know, get through this. And I think things are starting to, they're starting to look better, and it's going to take time. But I think that the year is flying, as I said, and the closer we can get to November here and, you know, and make it through that. The question is, you know, do we take back the House and then all of a sudden we have an awful November and December until everyone's sworn in? Got to make it to January.
Well, and you've got Mitch McConnell saying that they're going to cancel August recess simply because, well, you know, Democrats are going to have to stay and not campaign.
Right. I mean, you know, he's going to do that. And, you know, all of a sudden, apparently Mitch McConnell wants to work. It'll be fascinating to see how that works, because at the end of the day, he does struggle to pull together the votes that he needs.
I think it's just more of the game. And last question, Anthony Kennedy, does he retire at the end of this session?
I have absolutely no idea. It's a great question. It doesn't seem to be something that anyone is talking about nearly enough. But it's kind of like the question that people are saying, like, who's going to be the nominee in 2020? This is like the first time in my life I couldn't even, you know, venture to guess, and I wouldn't put any money on it if I was in Vegas.
No, I'm right there with you. And I'm sure, as much as I'm not a fan of Anthony Kennedy's, I'm hoping he doesn't resign, because it only gets much crazier from here.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be a lot of interesting things that end up being decided by this court. And, you know, the question is if there's an impeachment, is there stuff at the Supreme Court? And, I think time will tell. But it's going to be a busy couple months here.
Yeah, and one of the scary things that somebody emailed me was Justice Ted Cruz.
Yeah, that would be terrible. And you know, things are not looking good for him either. So, you know, Texas, Arizona, Georgia, there's a big shift in the electorate and the way things are headed there.
Well, I'm hoping. Keep up the great work, Adam. I appreciate you taking some time and sharing your thoughts with us.
You too. Thank you for everything.
Fantastic stuff. Our good friend Adam Parkamenko. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. I'm the talk. This is why we fight, why we lie awake. This is why we fight.
Finally, radio for the rest of us. Rick Smith.